review this computer model that they had for predicting what would happen in case of an accident. And it was inadequate. And to give you an example, they had trouble understanding why as much ruthenium vaporized from Chernobyl has been found. And their model was only considering binary gaseous species. And they weren't considering thermals. In the case of ruthenium, the oxyiodides, for example, would be very stable and quirky, and their calculations weren't considering that. So we have a number of suggestions on how to improve their models.
I think that pretty well covers the papers you had highlighted. Of course, we have the I-ring lectures.
Mm-hmm.
That's not out in a book form, then, you say?
Well, I don't know if it will be. They had trouble working out arrangements for the publisher. The publishers didn't think enough volumes would sell and so on. And last I heard, they probably don't publish them. And I've been getting a lot of people have heard about it, and I've been getting requests for it. The trouble is, with the limited time of presentation, it doesn't give enough detail. Mm-hmm. People would have to go to the references to really understand it.
Well, that's becoming more and more of a problem in chemistry. The cost of the book has gotten so high.
Oh, yeah.
The market is...
It's unbelievable. You know, some of them, the cost is 60 cents per page. Students are Xeroxing them rather than buying them.
Well, I know when I was selecting textbooks for my students, if I ever asked a sales representative what the cost was of the book, I'd never find out. They didn't have that information. I didn't know. I didn't know until it showed up in the bookstore what the cost was going to be, and the students then would let me know. But and a specialized book now has just become very, very difficult. Maybe we'll end up with there are some moves to go to electronic publishing.
Yeah, they're talking that.
Wanted to ask you about a couple other things. In your Palladium Medal address in 1971, you said the following: "It is my contention that the current political pressure to orient all research toward quickly attainable practical results will be destructive of research progress and will seriously handicap the development of practical results." That was 21 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And you're really seeing a lot of the industrial point of view is very short term, and they don't even think of the possibility of the Japanese are doing it, setting aside a decade for a long time. In fact, John has just had this experience working for industry, and they don't let you work on a problem long enough to really get a full development. And many of these developers have pitfalls, and you're not sure which way to go, and it takes a while. And this emphasis on the short term is destructive.
And that you feel that still today, that hasn't changed in
21
years.
Definitely.
What's responsible for that?
In fact, it's even worse. I remember I was consulting for Union Carbide, and they, at the time, were interested in doing some fundamental research in the directions that would be important. And they were building a laboratory, I think in New York somewhere or other. And then there was some change in the board of directors, who all lawyers or things like that. And they decided, oh, that's a waste of money. And even though they had the building under construction, they stopped it. And they curtailed some of the long-term fundamental research that would be of interest.
So you think it's more, it's Is it because the business people are taking over the management of the companies?
And the same has happened to General Electric. General Electric in the old days did some beautiful work in developing new concepts. And now it's taken a long time. I don't know if you ever heard of the diamond business, great General Electric, how it started. What is his name? Tracy? Anyhow, he was working for General Electric, and he had the idea of producing diamonds under high pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, no, they said, kind of that. But he did anyhow. Now, at that time, they didn't interfere as much as they do now, but he never got a salary increase. Mm-hmm. It was just frozen. And he kept working at it, and one day he came in with a handful of diamonds. Boss said, oh, you're going to get a salary increase. He says, I'm quitting. And he went back home to Utah, bringing young. And of course, GE had the patent on his new device, but he invented an even better one. And it's a nice word. Tracy Hall is his name. It can be very difficult in industry to really do a good transition. All right, son.
Well, years ago, it wasn't uncommon to have a scientist as the head of a company or involved in the management, but that seems to have changed drastically.
In many companies, yeah. Fortunately, there are a few of these semiconductor companies that still have some scientists running.
You were involved with the radiation laboratory for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the Manhattan Project days on.
But then you were head of the Inorganic Materials Research Division. You mm-hmm. started that? Did
yeah.
you start that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I really didn't have the time for it, but it was a worthwhile effort because I was able to get a lot of young people started in solid-state work, particularly most of the people now in physics in their solid-state program have been very productive, started through IMRD, and we were able to get the building built for, you know, to have people use the sophisticated equipment that they wouldn't be able to afford on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And very productive.
Let's talk about Berkeley in general, the colleagues you worked with over the years that you were here. Say something about some of those people.
Well, of course, in the G.M. Lewis days, I certainly found it very stimulating, and we've had some very good deans trying to maintain that type of tradition. And still have some very good research and teaching going on here.
Are there any specific faculty that you interacted with that influenced your work or that you collaborated with?
Oh yeah, there were quite a number who I worked with. Of course, there would be people like Pitzer and Al Johnston and Neil Bartlett and Ray Monroe, and quite a few of them. Going back to the older days, Rolofson and Slattery and Easton.
Let me close and let's just. If there's anything that I haven't covered that you would like to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But I had one further last question. Paper number 170. Chemical thermodynamics and the future development of chemistry, including environmental problems. It's in pure and applied chemistry.
Oh. Okay, that really has to do with the project we're planning for Penn. In fact, that was the paper I presented in the Moscow conference. And the point was that we are approaching a real crisis as far as sufficient productivity to maintain the standard of living and to meet the pollution demands and so on. And we're going to have to revise a lot of our technological processes, which will need new materials. We won't be able to do it with the common conventional materials we've used in the past. And the difficulty is this. You consider all the elements which you could combine in various ways to maybe make new materials. It's such a tremendous number that you can't do the Edisonian method. You have to have some way of predicting which are the most likely candidates and reduce maybe to a dozen the ones that you want to work on. So that same idea again, we need to expand our predictive models so that we can predict undiscovered new materials that will meet our requirements.
As I recall, the introduction of that paper is very pessimistic.
Well, I think we're in for some tough times in the next couple of decades. The world's going to go downhill. Yeah. And I think the rate we're going, we're going to have to adapt to the much lower standard of living.
You think people are ready to accept that?
Well, they're realistic. They know because we. And part of the problem is an educational problem in our country. In the old days, when the workers who really doing the real productivity, not just service industries, who were doing the farming or building buildings, building automobiles, and all the rest of it, we had a lot of people coming from Europe who came to the U.S. because in Europe they were frozen by their status. Whereas here, they thought they worked hard enough and educated their children, they could advance socially. And we've reached the point now where we're not getting people of that type. I mean, except for some of the Orientals coming in. But we have a large Hispanic and black population that ought to be good at work, but they're not being educated properly, and they're not shown, because they're always told, well, you're not very deaf, you can't hope to do anything, and they ought to have people who have, in their group who have succeeded, come back and finish it. I have a striking example. I had a graduate student who came from Jamaica. The blacks are top notch, and he was confident, no problem doing things. He wanted to go back to Jamaica to help the country. And I even talked to some of the people who were familiar with their family. They said, no, you're wasting your education. Your education is too advanced to be utilized there. What you ought to do is stay in this country, use your education, and send money back to help develop them. Well, he did go back and returned. He said he was right. He's now teaching at a university in this country.
Hmm.
But now he would be a good role model for some people and say, I did it, you can do it too. And we need more of that type. But I talked to the white students in my neighborhood. How are you doing in algebra? Oh, I don't want to bother with that. That's too much work. They want to be salesmen, business managers, politicians. And we're losing out to people who are willing to put the effort in for real productivity, that is what we live on. And we're going to have to make it possible for some of the low-income people who could take advantage of working in those hard jobs. ordinary people don't want to bother with.
Well, when you started in chemistry, chemistry was one of the glory subjects. It was chemistry, chemical engineering were like computer science became later on. Mm-hmm. They were the top areas to go into and showed that was an area of great promise. I don't think that's the case today. I was reading yesterday that the average salary for a Major League Baseball player this year is over $1 million. That's mm-hmm. every player on every team. Why should people want to go into science? You work 24 hours a day that making those crucibles back in the Manhattan Project days. People aren't going to do that type of thing, and get and have very little to show for it.
Well, I think we have to do a better job of educating the elementary school students on how challenging and exciting it can be. We were trying to do that in the elementary schools. We had a project where we were trying to help the teachers present science more effectively. And when we went to the third grades, it was really fun. Those kids were curious, they were eager to try things. When we went to the 10th grade, unless they knew what answer you wanted, they would never answer your question. They had been told that you were expected to memorize this and then come back and exam. And they were ruined as the scientists. Because the scientist has to make guesses, he has to try out things, whether he's sure they'll work or not, just to explore. And that's getting wiped out. And he somehow has to do a better job of maintaining their curiosity and eagerness to explore. We've really gone downhill.
Doesn't look like there's any immediate solution to that problem either. At least I don't see it.
Well, there are solutions. It's a question of getting the financial support for the politicians to recognize that. Now, when California was set up as a state, education was given a top priority. And for a century, California really has led mm-hmm. the other states, the rest of the world, in education. And it's going downhill now. The politicians are cutting off all the money for education.
The governor of Pennsylvania just introduced massive cuts to education mm-hmm. at all levels, from elementary schools through the major universities.
They're cutting off the future of our society.
For example, the University of Pennsylvania is the only veterinary school in the state of Pennsylvania, and it's going to close because of these cuts. Those are the kinds of things that are going to be very, very difficult.
And they just turned down in the Congress the plan to divert military funds to education and other things. Yeah, that was a tremendous waste, all that money going into the military. And what they've done is taken the money from our grandchildren. They're going to really be in a bad way. And a lot of these guys, I'm concerned that. I have, back in the 70s when we had the oil problem, I had a call from a fellow in Texas. He wanted my support to get the government to greatly increase drilling and get more oil. So we were comparing how much oil we have, and we were pretty good drilling. So I says, gosh, what's going to happen to our grandchildren? His answer was, that's their problem. And just short-term problem. And the country's going to suffer unless we can somehow get the message across that we've got to build for the future.
Well, I don't mean to end on a pessimistic note, but is there anything else that I haven't covered that you'd like to add at this point?
Oh, we could go on for days, but there's a limit.
Well, I'd like to thank you for spending the time with me this morning. Mm-hmm. And it's been very enjoyable.
Oh, good. Well, I go through it also.